My name is PewDiePie.
How did he become the biggest star?
Hey man, congrats on your journalism job.
Oh my god, our kids are listening to Elvis.
We need to keep fighting back.
Gunmen stormed in.
Subscribe to PewDiePie.
So it's been a while since you did one of these, huh?
It's been a while. It's been a long time.
How long?
Probably 2 years, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why now?
All right. So Felix decides to sit down and talk with you for his first interview since the whole Wall Street Journal controversy.
Yeah. And I was curious, first of all, like just why he was doing this, like why he was sitting down with someone from the mainstream media after so long.
Yeah, I was surprised because, like, you know, I've been asking for like 2 years.
Interesting. So here we are.
And also, like, after following his career for so long and just seeing everything that's happened, I just wanted to know what he made of it all.
I was actually, like, in preparing for this, going back and looking at some of your old videos.
Yeah.
Sort of Minecraft days. Do you remember feeling sort of happy during that time? Like, was that a good time in your life?
Yeah, I think so.
I think things were going pretty well.
Things were going great. Watch more than I ever expected, definitely.
And then, like, 2015 and into 2016, I think there was sort of this larger cultural thing happening where, mm-hmm. like, the line between the internet and the real world was sort of...
Started to break down a bit. People started paying more attention to what's happening on YouTube. And
do you feel like, I sort of remember from that time that things were starting to get a little edgier, like there was sort of more incentives to try out edgier stuff.
I think YouTube at that time was at a place where no one really knew where the limit was.
Right.
And I think that's why it almost became, a lot of channels just pushing it as far as possible because there was no restrictions at the time, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think also my channel went through this, I didn't only want it to be associated with kid humor, even though edgy humor is a lot of childish, but I think it's more stepping up to teen humor.
Do you feel like you recognize that there was a risk in getting sort of more into that space, that there could be like a backlash?
I think I was really not focused on that at all in retrospect. I was pretty... what's the right word? Irresponsible about it. I don't think I really looked at too much of the consequences.
Do you remember, like, getting pushback from anyone in your life that was, like before the journal article? And, like,
well, I kind of wish I had some. Clearly I didn't.
But fans were just into it and they thought...
I think, everyone... It's when you're in this space where people understand that it's a joke, you're in this area where everyone is on the same page. It's not really... No, I don't remember having that being...
And was that how you sort of viewed, like, that period as just people joking and being sort of... Stuff that might look serious if you look back at it today, but at the time was just all joking?
Yes, I think so.
Was there ever something that you, like, stopped yourself because you were like, oh, that's too edgy?
Well, definitely the infamous sign.
As Felix and I were talking, it became clear pretty quickly that, like, the things that he was doing in his videos, these kind of, like, edgy experimental things.
The goal isn't to purposely push too much or makes people feel bad. And I think that's...
Including this Fiverr video with the death to all Jews sign, they all felt pretty low risk to him.
And how do you draw that line? Like, how did you decide what was too edgy and what was just edgy enough?
That's a good question.
Just kind of like...
The way me and my editors work is that we kind of go uncensored and then in the edit, we'll definitely cut out most of the edgy jokes or whatever. If we recognize that someone might get offended or hurt by it, then there's no reason to intentionally put it in. I think that's the way we looked at it.
You ready to go to the Wall Street Journal?
I feel like we're almost there anyway. So.
Okay. When did you know that this was going to be a thing?
As it was happening, it went really fast. Really? I think just like 2 days before I heard about the whole thing, and it was so... It just seemed bizarre. I was like, well, I couldn't possibly understand why it was a thing even. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal either.
What was that day like for you? Like, where were you?
It was on Valentine's Day. Me and my girlfriend had rented this little cottage. And then, I can laugh about it now, I guess. But it was crazy, like extremely stressful. I didn't know what was going to happen.
So you just spent the day on like calls with people?
I spent the day being in this little cottage outside with no internet. And I told myself, okay, I should not check what is happening on Twitter right now. And then I go on Twitter and then there's like J.K. Rowling calling me a fascist. And I'm like, how is this happening? This is crazy.
And when you sort of were trying to figure out how to respond to that, were you torn between like, okay, on one hand, like, I probably should apologize for this. So
that yeah. And I did apologize in the video.
But also wanting to be like...
I also wanted to set the record straight. Mm-hmm. At least give my side of the story. And, you know, it was crazy because Wall Street Journal, they also came to my house to say, we want to help you, like give you a full story again. It just felt kind of crazy.
After the story published?
After the story published, they came back, yeah.
And you said?
I said, well, I'll tell my story on my channel. And that's kind of how I saw it.
Was there a moment where you're like, fuck, like, what if they have a point? And I got too edgy and like, were there moments of...
Yeah, of course, definitely. It wouldn't have happened if I didn't push it too far, obviously. But I think the whole thing also that happened with Wall Street Journal made people really strongly want to support me. People felt like it was unjust what happened. And they wanted to support the channel even more for that. So I really felt like, well, maybe media doesn't want to write nice things about me, but at least I have the support from so many people that it felt like it doesn't matter then. I don't really care if that's the case. I think also after the Wall Street Journal thing, I sort of got labeled as a bad person. And then that sort of line of word just kept going, I think.
Is there one sort of piece of criticism that stands out that you sort of wrestled with more than others?
I think the constant association with the alt-right and politics in general has been really frustrating. Because that whole world feels so far away from me. So yeah, that's frustrating. I think any label, you know, it seems pretty common to just throw labels around. Oh, he's this, he's that. And be called things that you don't think you are at all.
What are your politics? Like, I'm just curious. How do you identify, what issues are you passionate about, like, beyond YouTube?
I think I'm more apolitical than anything, but I'm probably somewhere in between. I don't know. I mean, I don't really feel passionate about politics. I know that's a really lame reply. I wish maybe I was, but I am not that invested.
Are there any politicians who excite you?
No.
Like anywhere in
the world? I could not name one, no. I don't know.
Because, you know, there's this whole community of like conspiracy theorists and people who like think that you're secretly hiding.
I know. Conspiracy theorist is the right word for it. Yeah.
I mean, I was looking at, I have this whole log of like messages from these Discord servers for these alt-right guys. And they're saying stuff like, you know,
Discord servers.
Oh yeah. Like, PewDiePie will red pill all his millennial and Gen Z subscribers. It will be glorious. I get the feeling that PewDiePie is far more red pill than he lets on. He'd be a great ally, right. Stuff like that. What is that?
That's this conspiracy theory mumbo jumbo. I think it's really cringy as well. When people try, it's annoying as well. People trying to have me as some sort of symbol that doesn't apply. Thank you.
This podcast is supported by Tenderfoot TV. Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where the new podcast To Die For begins. Hosted by Neil Strauss, To Die For takes listeners inside the dark and dangerous world of Russian sexpionage, where targets are seduced for their secrets, and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, the producers of To Live and Die in LA, binge To Die For now on all podcast platforms.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. I developed this recipe when I was down in Georgia with my family. It stars a Korean red pepper powder called gochugaru. I love the way it blooms in the maple syrup and the rice vinegar. If you don't have gochugaru, you should totally get some. It's super versatile. It's not just that it brings heat, but fruity sweetness as well. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
Let's talk about subscriber PewDiePie. Like, when you started, did you have any idea that it would become this whole meme that would, like...
I think you know the answer. No. I thought it would be a fun joke for, like, 2 weeks, maybe, max. And now it's, like, 6 months later.
Were there parts of it that you thought were funny, like the printer hack or, like...
Yeah, I think a lot of it was really funny. People, you know, putting up posters, putting up banners... And yeah, the printer hack was kind of pushing it, but it was still pretty funny. No one was hurt by it, at least.
So Kevin, the timing of all this is that you met Felix just weeks after the shooting at Christchurch.
Right. And not only was this his first interview with the mainstream media in years, but it was also the first time that anyone had really gotten to ask him about the attack.
Walk me through that day and like where you were when you heard that this had happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 4 a.m. I rarely check my phone at that time, but I got a bunch of messages and I was like barely conscious. And then obviously I saw what had happened and just this pit in my stomach. It was just awful to hear about that someone would go so far.
What were some of the messages you got at 4 a.m.?
It was a big mix of, fuck PewDiePie, now he's really gone too far, we need to shut him down, just is awful. Like, and even people saying, you know, I don't think he's responsible, but blah, 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 even those, like, it really, really hurts. It was a fucked up day. It was a fucked up week. It's been a fucked up month.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, I feel bad even like, oh, it's so bad for me that he used my name when it's like people really affected by it. But it felt like I was dragged into, again, like this whole sphere of politics.
Do you feel like the responsibility that you have? Because, you know, so many of your fans are young and they're so passionate and whatever. Like, do you feel... like you've sort of gained a new, I guess, responsibility or ability to like shape the way those people see the world?
Yeah, obviously, yeah. It is a lot of responsibility.
What do you think the responsibility is?
Well, I don't know exactly what I would say, but... Mm-hmm. You know, having such a large audience, obviously, it is a responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, I stress out about publishing stuff in the New York Times, and we have 4 million subscribers.
You know? You only have 4 million?
I know, it's pretty pathetic, right? It's true. One piece of fallout from this... Wall Street Journal thing, and then some of the other stuff, and then this New Zealand thing. Like, there are a lot of people who don't follow you, but who hear your name and think, oh, that guy's problematic, or he's a neo-Nazi, or he's alt-right.
Right.
Like, how does that affect you?
It is obviously tiresome to be associated with something that you're not. It's a lot more than I think I signed up for. I don't want it to seem like I'm completely innocent either, and I've just done nothing wrong, and I've just been targeted, and I don't think that's the case either, but it does feel pretty unfair. I know also how people's minds kind of shift toward certain things, and I hope that within the next maybe year or two, people will have their mind changed. Because that's usually how long it takes for people.
Because your videos will change?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know, what's your message to those people? If you could like shout something from the rooftops and like hear everyone, have everyone hear it.
Just click on the latest video I upload and it's literally just me laughing at memes. I don't really know.
So it's literally just like watch my stuff and you'll get it. But a lot of people are not going to watch your stuff, right? That's the problem. They're going to see these headlines.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like you can do anything to set the record straight at this point, or have you done pretty much all you can do?
I can definitely set the record straight more, yeah.
What would that look like?
I don't know yet. I think it's step by step. I don't think anyone's going to change their mind over one thing. I need to keep pointing it out. I think hopefully conversations like this helps as well.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as a build block, kind of.
I am sort of curious about, like, your relationship with the media. And sort of, I mean, that's sort of a consistent theme of the past couple of years for you, is that you feel like sort of the media has bad intentions when it comes to covering you, that there's publications that consistently get things wrong. Like, how have the past couple of years shaped or changed your views on the media?
Well, a lot of times me calling out is when things have been said that I felt like were either one-sided or flipped in a way that wasn't really fair. And I think, you know, I should at least defend myself if those things happen. It's very frustrating to see certain things published about you that you feel like that is not what is true about me at all.
I mean, the hostility toward the media on not just your channel, but like the subreddit. And like, I just look through that stuff and I'm like, dear God, these people are like never going to believe anything. Like, it's like, these are people
I don't think
reflexively distrust everything we do.
I mean, I think it's because people who watch me know who I am. And then they see me in this article that is so different. Obviously they're not going to, they feel like it's unfair or that it's not correct. I don't really know where the line is drawn of who controls that, you know? So, but I think it's getting a bit tiring as well. I'm not really interested in having some sort of, I don't like the media sort of approach to things. That's not my intention. And I think, I hope at least I've grown a little bit to see past that, even if an article isn't perfect, then it doesn't have to be a whole thing about it.
I mean, let's be clear, you've made a lot of videos about the media.
I think I know
it seems to be like your primary enemy sometimes. Let's put that out there.
Yeah. I don't want it to seem like I'm sitting down with the media now, so now I'm going to be like cuddly wuddly over like,
oh, I mean, that is a little bit how it feels.
That's good then. No. I mean, I don't want to be too hostile, but I also feel like my opinion about a lot of it has changed over the years. I think going through all these controversies constantly, and obviously when I feel the need I need to defend myself, I do, but I also think I'm getting to a point where I don't think it's going anywhere.
And Kevin, what did you leave this interview thinking about, especially around this question of why he finally talked with you.
I mean, obviously, like, he doesn't need me to get a message out to the public. Like, he has millions more subscribers than the New York Times. But by talking to me when he did, it almost felt like he was proposing a truce. He was saying that, like, that era of my career is over, and I'm going to change.
Hello. I wanted to talk seriously and honestly for a moment about my thoughts on what's been going on for the past couple months, and hopefully you can get a better understanding.
And a few days after our interview,
something happened that I don't think anyone would have predicted. The Christchurch shooter said subscribe to PewDiePie.
Felix posted a new video.
I think it's time to end the subscribe to PewDiePie movement or meme.
Where he directly asked his fans to end the subscribe to PewDiePie meme.
To have my name associated with something so unspeakably vile has affected me in more ways than I let shown. I just didn't want to address it right away, and I didn't want to give the terrorist any more attention. I didn't want to make it about me, because I don't think it has anything to do with me.
Not long after that.
9 years ago, I uploaded my first video onto YouTube. This is what that video looked like.
Felix hit 100 million subscribers.
I won't bore you with every step of the way of the journey. It's been long. It had its ups and downs.
And to celebrate,
I made a lot of mistakes on the way, but I've grown.
He reflected on how he got there.
And I feel like I've finally come in terms with the responsibility I have as a creator. About 100 million subs too late, but you know. But the channel's done a lot of good too.
And also pledged to give a $50,000 donation to the Anti-Defamation League, which is one of the organizations that had criticized him for making Hitler-Nazi jokes.
We did it! I want to thank all the people I work with over the past couple years, but most importantly, I want to thank the bros.
And yet again, it sparked a controversy.
Stop! I just wanted to interrupt this video because I need to make an announcement. Did you guys see the video I made where I celebrated 100 million subscribers? It was a video I was really...
But this time, it wasn't the mainstream media coming after him.
I made the mistake of picking a charity that I was advised instead of picking a charity that I'm personally passionate about, which is 100% my fault.
It was the internet.
The whole internet just didn't believe it. Like, why is he donating to his charity? Look at his face. Full conspiracy mode.
Some of his fans claimed that the Anti-Defamation League was too partisan. Websites and comment sections filled up with all these conspiracy theories saying, like, PewDiePie is being blackmailed into this donation.
I'm sorry for all the confusion, and I'm sorry for messing this up. That's what I do.
So he apologized and took back his $50,000 pledge.
Good one. Here we go, guys. Historical moment. My first video ever was a Minecraft video.
And in the midst of all this, nearly a decade after it first brought him attention.
God, after all these years.
Felix uploaded a video of himself playing Minecraft.
Is that a freaking horse? That's a freaking horse. Oh my God, there's horses in Minecraft? Can I ride it? Oh! Oh! Ah! Look, it's Tiny Horse. Hello, Tiny Horse. This is amazing. I love my...
Have you ever wondered why we go to war? Or why you never seem to be able to get out of debt? Why there is poverty, division, and crime? What if I told you there was a reason for it all? What if I told you it was done on purpose? What if I told you that those who were corrupting the world, poisoning our food, and igniting conflict were themselves about to be permanently eradicated from the earth? You might think that an idealistic fantasy. Well, let me tell you a story.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.